sins of being Italian.
I have a similar problem with my name.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to present or to speak here today. I do have a kind of a prepared comments, and then I'll be happy to entertain whatever questions you have. And I am president of Alvis Laboratories, and we are a newly owned subsidiary of Nana Development Corporation. And indulge me as I take you through a brief history of drug and alcohol testing in the workplace, and I think that may actually answer some of the questions that might be running through your minds. And it all began on the afternoon of January 4th, 1987. A Boston-bound Amtrak train collided with a Conrail locomotive north of Baltimore with 659 passengers on board. Following that accident, there were 16 people dead and 174 people injured. When tested, the brakeman and the engineer for the Conrail both tested positive for marijuana. Because of public outrage, a coalition was formed, and that eventually got the attention of the United States Senate Commerce Committee. And the coalition's efforts paid off because a bill was submitted by U.S. Senator Hawley from South Carolina and Senator Downforth from Missouri. They both introduced co-sponsored legislation nationally that mandated drug testing of all Department of Transportation industry employees in safety-sensitive positions. And as it turned out, it was later told that Senator Downforth's younger daughter was scheduled to take that very train, but opted to take a ride with a friend back to college. This was the beginning of drug testing within the Department of Transportation industries, which they regulate, such as trucking, pipeline, airlines, railroads, marine, and nuclear industries, which require them by federal law today to test their employees for pre-employment testing, post-accident testing, reasonable cause testing, random follow-up, and return to duty testing. The next major change to occur in the United States came in 1991 when Congress approved the Omnibus Employee Testing Act. This act required the Department of Transportation to propose additional regulations that would include the testing for alcohol, which is the first legal drug to be tested for, and that's an important caveat. At that time, the Department of Transportation also expanded who would be tested under this new regulation, and on February 3, 1994, Secretary of Transportation Federico Pena announced the final rule which mandated the increase in who would be tested. The Omnibus Act added an additional 7 million transportation workers nationwide into mandatory drug testing programs. It also had a great effect on the state of Alaska. The Omnibus Act mandated the inclusion of intrastate commercial driver's license operators, including school bus drivers, state and municipal CDL license holders, which are vehicle operators, the truck drivers, the grader crews, and community activity bus drivers. Now here are some of the facts. According to the State of Alaska Department of Labor, as of July of 1993, when I collected this information originally, Alaska had 599,200 residents. Out of that total, 277,991 were currently employed. Over 53,000 Alaskans are mandated to test by the federal government, and those programs were all enacted by 1996. 19% of our employed population is in mandatory drug and alcohol testing programs by the federal government, or 8.8% of our total state's population is subject to federal DOT drug and alcohol testing. And then this information does not include all of the non-regulated industries that have chosen to test, the hotels, the ski resorts, the gas stations, some of the companies Ron Jordan from Medical Specimen Services testified at Anchorage, the pawn shops, and so on. Today, many Alaskan companies have realized the benefits from drug testing. Safety is a full-time job, and drug testing is just one more tool companies can use that will help them accomplish three things: safety, employee productivity, and job efficiency. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, 10% or 23 million Americans are abusing drugs. 6 million of them use cocaine. 10 to 15% of all highway fatalities involve drug use. An employee who uses drugs is 3.6 times more likely to be involved in a near miss or accident while on the job. Not to mention that the most recent U.S. household survey conducted by the Clinton administration showed that teen marijuana use was on the rise. And drug and alcohol testing in the workplace is here to stay. So as testing becomes more prevalent in the workplace, it's very important that companies do it right.
Very good, sir. We do have some other folks to testify today.
Okay.
And would you like to make some comments about the bill very specifically? Or
well,
you support the legislation?
I definitely support the legislation. I think that the testing criteria of today has come so far from the days of yesterday that we don't have to be afraid of false positive tests. The laboratory we use has conducted since 1989 2.5 million tests, and they have not had a problem with the drug or alcohol, with the drug testing that is done. They have not had a false positive, so false positives are very, very extremely rare in our industry today. So when you hear the naysayers coming up saying this is the testing mechanisms don't work, you have to look at the methodology, the screening, which is done by an antibody antigen reaction, and then you have the gas chromatography mass spectrometer, which is a chemical which is a physical principle test. It's a molecular test, and it gives us a fingerprint of the drug that tests positive. And then with the use of the physician, that helps insulate again, as Ron Jordan stated. The technology is there to assure employers and employees that the testing is done right. The important thing is, and that what this bill does is it does set out policy, and policy is something that's needed when you have 53,000 Alaskans involved in testing that are mandated, and then you have all of the other pocket of companies that are non-mandated, but they are testing. They're out there on the limb, and they're at the will of the, and they're at the, well, they're just out there on the limb. You have, I know of several of our customers who have been sued by their employees. The cases very rarely, if ever, get to court. We have one against us at Alvest Laboratories with an air aviation case, where it was dismissed in a summary judgment. There was no basis, the judge said, but yet the employee continued that action on to the Supreme Court, which was just recently decided in our favor and in favor of air aviation. But yet the employee pursued this. Henceforth, the company had to pursue it as well and had to expend resources on this. This is what this bill is intended to do: set forth policy that employers can follow that protects the employee by using a SAMHSA-certified laboratory, by having a collection procedures that are spelled out and understood, by using a physician called an MRO, Medical Review Officer, review test results, and then advise the employee of what the policy is that they're expected to follow, as well as to have disciplinary procedures, so everybody understands the contract, the employee-employee relation contract in that policy. So this bill is necessary in the state of Alaska today, and I encourage that it doesn't delay in committee and that it does get passed on to judiciary as soon as possible so that action can be taken, because there's close to 30% of the state's population is in testing programs.
There are questions of witness.
Well, one question.
Oh, Representative Ryan.
Matt, can you tell me, Matt would be my constituent, by the way, so please excuse the familiarity. Has there been any litigation that's gone on testing the constitutionality of this whole process of, making people conform to the drug testing policy? Did the courts address that at all?
At the federal level, they have. And in each and every case, it has withheld the court scrutiny. In Alaska, we have now two decisions. The Lutke versus Neighbors Drilling was one decision, and you have the recent ERA case where, in Alaska, we have a little twist to it, too. Private employers are allowed to test based on safety-sensitive need. That's what the Supreme Court has said. And I'm not an attorney, so you might want to get your attorney's slant on that. But the public employees have a different, it doesn't go across the board to public employees. So I would say yes, in Alaska, the right to test has been through the courts and has been upheld.
Thank you.
Except for members of the legislature.
Well, there you go. I did bring a few extra bottles. And if you're interested in knowing the systems being used today, I do have some bottles and some or kits and some chain of custodies. So if you wanted to familiarize yourself with how a drug test is done today, whether it's done at a clinic or whether it's done at a facility like Ron Jordan's at Medical Specimen Services or at ours. And there are several providers in the state. There, as far as the people providing this service, there's two in Fairbanks, including all of the clinics. Two particular that specialize in this. There's four or five in Anchorage, and there's the countless national labs that are competing for the same marketplace as Alaskans are. So there's plenty of competition that splits the Alaskan marketplace up.
Without going back to my old files, I think that this bill is a substantial improvement over 522.
It's a lot of improvement over 522. When Representative Green's office called and asked that I read it and comment on it, it gave us an opportunity to revisit some of the concerns we had. If you remember, one of the concerns we had last year was the union issue, which was the old bill had a bargained impasse clause in there. Now through Representative Green's office, they've actually put in wording that collective bargaining is just part of the bill, part of the statute. Even if it may not follow the statute, it still is allowable under this rule. It's allowed us to actually tighten up quite a bit as a representative of the amendments. I've been here for a couple of days with the Alliance, and we've been popping in and out of that office working on amendments. So yes, it's a very different bill from last year.
Further questions? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to hear from Barbara Huff-Technos, please. And thank you for your patience, by the way. And those people that are here for the following bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Huff-Technos. I'm the Director of Legislative and Governmental Affairs on behalf of Teamsters Local 959. And I think I can very proudly say that we represent roughly about 6,000 members. We have existing collective bargaining agreements throughout the state with various employers. And we have attached drug testing and alcohol testing policies. So the issue itself is not new. We also represent truckers, and yes, somebody asked about the CDLs. Every single one of our truck drivers are and have been tested for I guess Matt probably has more specific issues there. I think it was probably rather apropos the last question here, has there been some significant changes from last year's bill? And to be real honest with you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, up until actually yesterday evening, I believe it was, I had a chance to chat briefly with Mr. Logan regarding some general issues that we have out there. In sitting here in the hearing and going through some of the more recent amendments, I was somewhat pleased to see that at least those particular provisions have been modified. But I guess our issue here goes much, much broader than that. And I would like to preface some of my comments and hopefully not offend anybody here on the committee nor anybody present in the room today, because I think that everybody needs to understand, and maybe everybody does after the last bit of testimony, this bill grants immunity, we believe limited immunity. In fact, we are concerned from a legal perspective that indeed that immunity may be actually flowered out there, and the employee would still have a right if they believe that there were provisions that were violated to sue the employer if need be. And I go back to, I guess, a general concern there with the bill and the way it has been drafted. Who makes the decision on whether or not the employer has followed, whether it's a provision in a collective bargaining agreement where we as collective bargaining participants and members that we represent have the ability to file a grievance and go through an arbitration process. So we have a neutral third party that reviews the information and makes a decision based on that information brought together from both sides. Under this bill, as it's drafted, who makes that determination that the employer is not going to be sued? And we're not here today, I guess, to argue against drug testing, because as I said earlier, our industry is and has been heavily regulated. We not only represent truckers, we have hospital workers out there that are also in the same or similar predicament, and we also represent employees in the airline industry, which is another heavily regulated industry. So we looked at the bill, and I must admit, Mr. Chairman, that my attorney, unfortunately, has many other cases, and trying to get information from Representative Green's office here and attempt to make some sort of a presentation with respect to the issues brought forth in this particular bill, we still have a lot of unanswered questions. And for the record, Mr. Logan was at least receptive to those issues, because I'm not an attorney, that I have been able to review the bill here in the last couple of days since I've been in town and get some general questions answered. But I think there is something that you could do with this bill. And I'm going to lay it on the table, at least, if this is going to be continued, some thought process for the committee here in reviewing or analyzing this bill further. You could actually take this bill and look at from subsection 600, 610, and 615, and we were very pleased with the correction in 615, because that's actually one of the issues that I had raised in my presentation here, as were a couple of the other issues that we had concerns about in the bill. But if you take a look at it, subsection 600 and subsection 610, those areas do cover the immunity or the limited immunity provisions for an employer who does decide to participate in drug testing or implementing a drug and alcohol testing program. The flip side of that is, I guess, a quasi list of issues or concerns that should be addressed in an employer's drug testing policy. Now, under a collective bargaining agreement, we sit down and we spend months going through and negotiating what those provisions are. I have heard through some testimony, through conversations with other individuals, that this is an attempt really truly to legislate the policies and procedures that the employers are going to implement out there so that everybody is testing in the same or similar manner. Well, I'm here to say we've got drug testing policies that are applicable to each one of the employers and the particular industry that they're dealing in. Some are on a random testing basis in our private employer representatives. And then in our public sector, we've got a totally different perspective, which is another issue that I'd like to lay on the table here. As I read this bill, and I haven't had a legal opinion from our attorney, this bill does seem to cover both the public as well as the private sector employers. And there are certain constitutional rights that, from a public employer perspective, need to be addressed or at least looked at as you're going through this particular process. We also represent public employees in this area, so we're now caught probably between both sides there. And with each one of the public employers that we represent, we also have drug testing as well as alcohol testing provisions in each one of those labor agreements. A couple of the issues that I additionally wanted to walk through here just for food for thought. I've discussed the granted limited immunity, and I think, to be honest, if everybody was looking at this bill honestly, I think that's what it really boils down to. Do we go in and in essence create another form of, and I bring up another recent issue here, tort reform? What if we just put a provision in the tort reform bill that says employers can't be sued by employees because they enact a drug testing or alcohol testing program? I think that concept, and we're not saying that an employer should not be immune from a libel suit if indeed they have done everything that they are alleged to have been required to do under that policy, then indeed they shouldn't be sued. And 9 times out of 10, where you're going to run into questions or issues is with the drug testing company themselves, so whether it's Allvest that does the testing on behalf of one of the employers or anybody else's company out there. And from a perspective, I guess, of filing grievances out there, that's usually where we run into the issues and concerns, is what chain of events were actually followed within the testing or that handling process there. But I think you could theoretically separate out this bill, and I think it was earlier actually called the carrot and the stick out there. We're sitting down looking at this going, well, to coin an old phrase from Mayor Fink, if it ain't broke, what are we trying to fix here? And if indeed it is a simple immunity for an employer, and our attorney has not had an opportunity to do a lot of research, but just in his quick perusal of this earlier today, under section 600, and I believe he referenced D, and also under 610, that the employee, if they felt that they were not, again, in conformance with the particular requirements out there, that that would still allow the employee to go in. Now, you may have a judge or a court of a higher appeal process make the statement or make a ruling that indeed this particular law was not violated, and therefore there was no standing with respect to the employee's particular lawsuit out there. But to craft a bill here under the guise that the employer is going to be immune from those lawsuits, we are concerned, and no, we don't represent the employers out there by no means, but if they were to walk away thinking that they would be immune from lawsuits, we're concerned that indeed that may not be covered in this particular bill. We are concerned with respect to the collective bargaining provision, even though it's been deleted out, that what happens if there is no collective bargaining agreement in place. Say an employer who sees this bill decides, well, we'll just go ahead and negotiate to impasse. The collective bargaining agreement, with the exception of this particular drug testing, drug and alcohol testing program, is left out at impasse, and they come in and implement their own program to garner this particular immunity. I mean, one side or the other there, it's a question, at least from our perspective, that's been raised, even taking that impasse resolution or that impasse reference out, whether or not that indeed still gets into or dissolves that particular legal requirement of the state to now be crafting language with respect to drug testing. And if the legislatures or the state government is now going to start drafting drug testing policies, is that not a responsibility of the employers? And in the circumstances where they are represented, a collective bargaining issue, where they're not, it's an employer prerogative, and it's a policy type set of circumstances that they have actually assumed. Whether they're regulated by federal law, and if they are regulated, there are certain requirements that they do have to abide by in going through and testing their employees through that process. I'm trying to go through my notes here to make sure that some of the amendments that have been made, I'm not reiterating on the record here as concerns that we had.
Well, Ms. Tackness, maybe I can ask you a question right now regarding the provision on page 7, the 0.670 or the collective bargaining clause. And reviewing the language in there and also reviewing the successional analysis, it says that the even though the collective bargaining agreement or policy is not consistent
mm-hmm.
with the statute as found in the bill, that the employer gets the full benefits of the bill. In other words, it seems to me that notwithstanding whatever the collective bargaining mm-hmm. agreement was, that this bill would supersede that. Is that an area of concern to you?
It is an area, Chairman Rotberg, that has been raised from our attorney's perspective. Again, he got a fax copy of it and has not had an opportunity to fully ascertain the impact that this drug and alcohol testing program, by legislating it, has on those existing collective bargaining agreements. My own reading of this particular section, it does not have the collective bargaining agreement or the language in that does not have to mirror this for this particular employer, whether it's the state of Alaska or a private sector employer out there to gain that benefit.
Very good. Do you have any further, Representative, or are you done, Barbara? Or?
Well, actually, I had just a couple of additional points there. And I had talked with Mr. Logan yesterday evening regarding the testing levels, and I believe it's referred to at least the test, and there's a requirement under the policy that the employee be notified what they would actually be tested for when they went in and had the test conducted. But the testing levels, and of course those are actually set by federal rules or regulations out there, but at least a reference of some sort should be made within the context of this bill if indeed you're going to maintain the drug and alcohol testing program or a reference to it in the bill besides granting the immunity out there. There is no testing levels what the employee is or is not supposed to be testing for, and that I guess could even potentially come down to a zero tolerance. But the bill really does not address that one way or the other. We also had here bill requiring a qualified MRO, which has been actually addressed in at least one of the amendments there. From our perspective, that definitely was for the MRO being utilized for purposes of interpretation of those results, as well as hopefully being in a position to prevent any potential violations of confidential information limited to just those individuals with a need to know out there. The bill also references, I believe in two or three sections, reasonable suspicion. It does not define, nor does it set forth in the bill what constitutes reasonable suspicion, but And I did talk with Mr. Logan, and we still have not reached any kind of clear definition or direction to go with that. The bill does not address the training. Under the federal rules or regulations out there, a supervisor is required to be trained to detect or to recognize reasonable suspicion or situations on the job that may be caused to have an employee tested. The bill, well, the SAMHSA certification, that actually has been addressed in one of the amendments. The bill requires prospective employees to pay. That's also been addressed. In summation here, we have been, and I think we've got a long history of being a strong supporter of a drug and alcohol-free workplace. Forced upon us or not, it is something that I think in many of the areas and many of the industries that we do represent, it's had a real positive impact on those work situations. We have engineers that work in ditches up there, have had situations prior to some testing where we had some definite safety issues or concerns out there. It impacts our truck drivers as well as those employees that we represent in many other areas. The point being here, we do live, have worked historically in a regulated area where drug testing is not new. It is something that our members have learned to live with, and we are taking a very serious look at this bill, what its impacts really truly are, and if there is a need for this particular type of legislation, i.e. granting the immunity, whether it's actually tied in here or maybe put in another section of a law someplace else. We're not here, and we don't want to send the message that we're not in favor of drug testing or drugs and alcohol in a workplace. But we do think that there needs to be some real serious consideration in looking at the true intent of this bill and the impact that it is going to have on every worker in the state of Alaska, public and private sector.
Very good. Thank you very much for your testimony. Other questions, Ms. Tuckman? Representative Ryan.
Barbara, you had brought up some points that are well worth consideration, but you've addressed them from the point of view, I don't know about the rest of the committee, but myself apparently has superior knowledge. I don't have knowledge of negotiations and all the things you've mentioned, so what I'm hoping to do is there going to be someone forthcoming with some very definite recommendations as far as the bill's concerned, or do you think perhaps we should expand this or do away with that or add this or so forth so that we can look at it perhaps in a little more general picture?
What we'd like to have an opportunity to do, and I have talked with Mr. Logan about some of these issues that we have raised here, the direction of the bill itself is a big concern from a legal perspective for an attorney. So the couple of days I've been down here, I've been trying to address, well, how do we fix what we've got here? And then I get hit this afternoon from our attorney saying, why don't you just look at the immunity provisions of the bill and what is the need for all of this other? And I understand the carrot, I guess, with the big stick out there. But it's going back to, if it ain't broke, what are we trying to fix? And our attorney has raised some real serious concerns here, the impact on the public and private sector employees, of which we both represent on both sides out there, because there are some constitutional differences. And if there is a way to amend this, we'd just like an opportunity to spend a little bit more time on this, in light of some of the substantial changes that have been made from last year's bill.
Further question if I may.
Further, right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You do realize the liability that the employer has from, if nothing else, the nuisance value of arbitrary suit. People who have undergone a testing process, it's been validated, it's legitimate, and they've been proven that they had this and action's been taken, and they just say, well, I don't want to accept that, and I'm going to hire a lawyer and I'm going to sue. And so the employer is has to put out considerable funds to defend these suits or else get a judgment against them. So, that is a part of doing business, and that is part of an overhead. And it makes it very difficult. There's a lot of this where you come up, where you get the bottom line starts being affected. And on the other hand, if they don't do this, they're negligent, and the employee has something happen, is found to have the job, then the employer is negligent and is subject to lots of damages and awards. So it kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. I think it's the purpose of this bill is to try to address that, to say there's somewhere there has to be some action I can take to remedy this situation so that I can show I've made a good faith effort to do the best I can and that my liability should be limited somewhere.
And I wish you each and every the best in trying to legislate the individual's ability to file a lawsuit. And I think there's been an effort here, and as our attorney pointed out, if that truly is the intent of the bill, then some focus being put on that, although he's at least somewhat concerned that indeed the employer may not be completely protected if that truly was the intent of these particular provisions in the bill. But definitely I would, Representative Ryan, I guess see both sides of the fence there. In the umpteen years we've had drug testing and alcohol testing programs out there, of course we deal in a little bit different set of circumstances through the collective bargaining agreement. If they come up, they're actually grievances, and I can name probably about five or six in the last 10 years that have actually been filed on a statewide basis in this particular area. Usually they're pretty clean and pretty clear cut.
Further questions? For the general information of the audience, that we do have one more witness on this bill, and I would like to, given the lateness of the hour and the fact that it's Friday and it's a lovely sunny day out, I do want to be able to bring up and have some just base initial testimony on House Bill 218. Ms. Burke has been patiently waiting. Therefore, if we bring it up today, which is my desire, if we have it already on our calendar, then we can bring it up at will. It's a major insurance omnibus bill. So with that in mind, I'd like to ask our next witness to join us.
That must be me.
Yes, ma'am, Ms. LeBeau.
I will be very brief.
Thank you, Pam.
My name is Pam LeBeau, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, and we are in support of this bill and of the amendments that have been passed today. And my reasons are contained in the letter that you have received, a copy of a letter that I wrote to Representative Green. And with that, unless you have questions, I won't take any more of your time.
Are there any questions of Ms. LeBeau? Thank you, Pam, for having the patience of sitting here and listening to this. It's been delightful. What's the will of the committee right now? I would prefer to move along, shuffle along with Buffalo. I think there's some questions that have been raised. Anybody have any suggestions here? Although, we do keep in mind, this does have a first of referral to the Judiciary Committee. Perhaps some of the legal questions could be taken up there. I don't know what is... any suggestions here, gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, in view of the questions on the bill and the amendments that we've made to it and everything, and the statements by Ms. Huff that her attorney hadn't had the chance to look at it enough yet, I'd like to suggest we hold this bill over till another meeting. And by no means am I against this bill or the intent of it, but I'd like to take a look at it further, have more time, and determine whether it actually does what the statement says it's trying to do.
Very good, Representative Sanders. It's the will of the chair that we do hold this bill over, but we're only going to hold it over till Monday, first thing on the calendar, and at that particular point in time, I will wish to move it to its next rightful home in Judiciary. At that time, we also will take limited testimony by invitation only on Monday in order to expedite the matter, because we do have a major calendar problem. I don't get jammed up, and I want to give everybody an opportunity to testify. If anybody wishes to testify further on this bill on Monday, please contact Mrs. Armstrong and my staff at committee aid and inform her of the desire to testify. I do have a few questions myself, so. And before we close out this, I just have one. Matt, why don't you test blood?
For drugs?
Right.
The urine test is much more sensitive and less intrusive. It causes a whole lot of, host of, blood has a whole host of intrusion issues with it. And urine is a better test and less intrusive.
Thank you, very good. With that, we'll hold over House Bill 207 for quick expeditious action on Monday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Green, and Ms. Logan, Matt. Now we'd like to have Marianne, Ms. Burke come forward and...
You plan on taking any action on this bill?
No, but we need to bring it up while we have a quorum. Yeah, that's fine. Next we have on the calendar, Committee Substitute for House Bill 218, Labor and Commerce. We have a committee substitute. We need to adopt the committee substitute.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to adopt committee substitute dated 4397 and titled E for discussion purposes.
Very good. Any objections? Very good. We have before us then the committee substitute in House Bill 118 and... with us this afternoon, the Director of Division of Insurance, Ms. Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mary Ann Burke, and I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance. This bill is a lengthy bill. It covers a number of different subjects. I would just like to summarize by saying that the purpose is to bring some modernization to some of the provisions, to clarify existing sections, to remove some barriers that have been inadvertently crept into Title 21 over the years, and even the playing field for the people who are doing business in the state of Alaska. The most significant single issue addressed here has resulted in a fiscal note, a positive fiscal note for a change of $485,000 per year. This is the result of asking for legislation that would allow us to collect the premium tax on insurance premiums on a quarterly basis rather than on a yearly basis. We have received no objection from anyone on this matter, and in fact we have been told it was inevitable and they were just waiting to when Alaska would switch to quarterly basis. I'd be happy to go into whatever detail this committee would like at this time, or
perhaps for the committee's edification, I know this is basically a housekeeping thing. Could you point out anything that might generate any controversy or is something that we need to make sure we take a look at, that we should focus on? Any one part versus any other part of the bill, Ms. Bird?
Mr. Chairman, we have received comments from the representative agency for 60% of the health insurers, health and life insurers, and they are in support of this, and in fact have the committee substitute is to recognize their minor points. I am not aware of any controversial sections at this time. The potentially controversial section was the collection of premium tax, which we have canvassed our insurers, and they are reluctant to give up their money early, but they recognize that it's necessary.
Ms. Brick, it's been my experience, having only served in this committee 3 years, that there was one of a bill similar to this in the last session. Now, I won't hold you to this, but are you going to promise not to bring up another omnibus bill in the next session if we pass this one, or is it seemingly is it a 2 year cycle, or do we get 1 year cycle?
2 years.
Okay, so the chances are then, without guaranteeing it, that you probably won't be bringing another one up in the next session. Would that be fair to say?
It's very fair, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I won't hold you to it in case you get into a bind, but very good. I think we can take a brief at ease here a moment. Mr. Brigade, for our information right now, the committee has not received any letters of support or opposition to the bill at this time. Hopefully, I know Mr. George is here earlier, but hopefully we'll try to get some of that before next Monday.
Mr. Chairman, to the best of my knowledge, the only letter that has been received was received on the Senate side from the organization I referred to that represents 60% of the life and health riders. And it states, and I will provide this committee a copy of that letter, that if the minor tweaks are incorporated here, were made, that they support this bill.
Very good. Any further questions at this time? We're hearing none. Well, we'll hold the bill over until further consideration, with the idea that we will be bringing it up on Monday for the purposes of your own calendar, ma'am. Well, thank you very much for being here. With that, the House Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned at 5:43.